Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path. On this episode, we have a special guest joining us. We have Stefanos Sifandos. Stefanos is a good friend of mine here in Austin, Texas. He is a relationship coach that helps people heal from their core wounds and childhood traumas to experience greater depth, wisdom, and freedom in their relationships. Now, Stefanos has been in the coaching game for over 20 years, has worked with thousands of people all over the world. In this episode, we talk about a variety of different things, starting with one of Stefanos' projects, which is called Asraya, which is a really awesome mastermind network that has people from all over the world who are impact focused as well as wealth focused. So it brings together a very special type of entrepreneur and creator and healer in the world, all coming together to create a collective effort towards building a better world together. So we dive into that. We also talk about the ability to regulate our nervous systems, to do breath work, to find and heal those wounds that we have within ourselves that came from childhood so that we can have a greater capacity. Stefanos talks about how you can exit the cycle of feast and famine when it comes to wealth and actually build consistency and safety in your body. We also discuss anger and what people misunderstand about anger and how to actually use anger as a fuel to actually better your life. Finally, we go into debunking this term of toxic masculinity and get into some concepts that Stefanos lives by that create healthy masculinity and a healthy masculine expression. This episode is filled with golden nuggets and gems of wisdom, and I'm excited to share it with you. Let's get into the show. Steph, welcome back to the show, man. It's awesome to have you on again.
Yeah, pleasure to be here, man.
Amazing. So I wanted to bring you back on, especially with, you know, some of the conversations that we've had before. For those who haven't heard our previous episode, I know you do a lot of relationship coaching. You help people work through their traumas in order to have better relationships with themselves as well as with their significant others. And my question for you is, in that realm, or maybe even outside of that realm, what are you most excited about that you're working on these days?
Oh man. So outside of, you know, the programs and the services and the coaching that's associated with, you know, my brand, if you like, but that area, I've really spent the last couple of years infusing a lot of what I've learned over the last, you know, 2+ decades into, you know, a movement, an organization, a community that you, I'm very blessed that you're a part of as well, called Asraya, A-S-R-A-Y-A. And that's a Sanskrit term. It means shelter-based refuge. It's really a space for us to congregate as visionaries and leaders and creators and creatives and entrepreneurs, not only to, you know, work on bringing the value that we bring into the world and our service and our message as individuals to the world, but to also co-collaborate and co-partner in deeper ways and to do the inner work. It's a space for us to do the inner work, to get into deeper nervous system regulation, to help us, you know, feel more connected and safe in our bodies, and also just help us see greater versions of ourselves. So it's a community for those that are seeking to do the outer work, like to really make imprints and impact in the world, and, you know, an income that comes with that as well, but also those that are seeking to do deeper inner work as well. And a big part of that is really looking back at ancestral intelligence and indigenous wisdom, and what can we really learn from so many different cultures from around the world that were just more connected to earth and connected to land. I think that moved more at earth speed and a slower pace. And I'm not saying that being in a fast-paced society is the worst thing. I am saying that there's some deep, deep value in slowing down as well. And also, what can we learn from our ancestors in those ways?
It's so inspiring every time I hear you share about Asraya, especially just where you've been in terms of your experience, because I know you've done a lot of inner work yourself. You've worked in the coaching space for how long is it now? Like over 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, since I was 18, man, I'm 42. So
yeah. So more than 2 years. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what I was curious about are a couple of things from what you shared there. Number one, what is it that inspired you to go from essentially just the coaching world, which, you know, when I say just, it sounds like it minimalizes a little bit, because it is a massive undertaking for the coach as well as the clients who involve themselves in that. But moving from that to something like creating a community like Asraya, clearly your vision had to become bigger than what you were doing. So what was it that initially inspired that within you to go from coaching and training coaches to actually opening up a community where people can harness this ancient wisdom and modern technologies as a way of creating together?
Well, it's been something that's it's been in my heart for a very long time, man, for years, right? And so I see Asraya as a vehicle for a greater volume of impact. But there's only so much that I can do as an individual, right? Even if I have, just as an individual, I get really grandiose here with it, and have this massive, massive platform like Tony Robbins and so forth. There's only so much that I can do as an individual. I have nothing against Tony Robbins. I very much admire him and value what he's done for the space and just for humanity, his contribution to humanity. I'm using him as an example. But I believe as a community, as multiples of us, right, really working together in more cohesive ways and co-collaborative ways to enhance our own personal missions, but also the collective mission of the group, right? And that to me just feels a lot more poignant and powerful, right? And it also removes the responsibility and the onus to one individual person. I think we share that load, we share that load together. We're relational beings. We connect and grow together as opposed to purely individuals or as individuals. And so I think there's a lot of value in that. And I also think it's a pretty cool social experiment. Like how far, and man, I'm going to be honest, like it is building community can be very challenging, right? One of the most challenging aspects of it is keeping people enthralled, keep people engaged. It's the biggest issue that all communities face, right? And so, we're not without our challenges in our community, but I'm also really curious to know, like, what if we can pioneer something and innovate something together in ways that we never have before as a community, moving towards a common shared goal and also the common shared goal being that every single individual has their own goals and objectives and an embodiment that they wish to be in. How do we facilitate the success or the fruition of that as a collective? So I don't know, man, I'm just curious to see what impact we can make and what ripples we can cause as a large group or as a group, full stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really cool the community aspect to some of these things and how it magnifies each person's individual selfish desires, if you call them that, or goals, and actually magnifies them so that they're able to actually help even more people and reach much further than we could possibly do on our own, especially just that network effect of with each new member brings new insights, new ideas, and new ability to connect. Like I've connected with people through Asraya already that I would have never connected with before who live like halfway across the world. And it's just the coolest thing to know that like all of our efforts and all of our creative ways of wanting to impact the world and even serve ourselves, at that level are creating this ripple and adding value to all these different people's lives, like through the masterclasses and being able to discuss these topics that are near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah, man. I love what you just shared around the connection with people that you may have never, ever met. And that's the power of community, right? That's the power of a community coming together that cares about self and cares about others. The people that you will find at Asraya are really, if I had to sort of narrow it down into some kind of avatar or description of an avatar or our target market or the type of person it attracts, it's really fundamentally, it's someone that values both impact and income. Now, I'll say it another way though. That's one way to say it. It's someone that values serving others and being of service to others and values their own self-worth, their own service to self. You can call it selfish selflessness. You can call it enlightened self-interest. It's that kind of person that wants to give and be in the world. And it doesn't necessarily come from a hyper-wounded place of compensation. Like I need to give to others and do for others to feel better about myself because I feel so unworthy. But it more comes from, maybe it originally came from that place, but now it more comes from a place of, I really just want to give. Mm-hmm. I really just want to give. And they also want to give to themselves. So it's not that you know, that wounded entrepreneur, or rather I should say that wounded spiritual healer, right? The wounded spiritual healer that gives and gives and gives and gives, but suffers. They don't have 2 cents to rub together. They don't know where they're going to get the next meal from, but they've got these beautiful spiritual gifts, right? That's not necessarily healthy either. And so the person we're bringing into this community is someone that knows the value of impact, knows the value of supporting other human beings, and also knows that accelerating and amplifying their own self in whatever ways that looks like, in whatever support you need at that time in your life, it also goes a very long way.
Mm-hmm. I love that you brought that up, especially the role that wealth plays in the ecosystem that you're creating. One of the things that I always share with my clients, as well as the people that I'm training as coaches, is I talk about this idea of serving from an overflowing cup. In other words, knowing how to fill yourself up so much so mentally, emotionally, spiritually, that you have nothing else left but to give. Like, the natural result is that you are going to give, and you're going to give generously, kind of like you were describing with that enlightened self-interest, if you will. Mm. And I noticed that in the past, when I got into this, it was coming from that wounded place. Like, as I started about a decade ago in the coaching industry, I also started pretty young. I think I was like 21 or something like that. Mm. And it was coming from that wounded place, like wanting to be approved of, wanting to prove my self-worth, my enoughness to other people. And what was interesting is only recently, I'd say like in the last 5 years, is when I really started having that conversation with myself about knowing my worth and knowing the value and realizing that I achieve much more from a place of wealth and abundance than I do from a place of starvation or a place of lack or wondering where the next, you know, client is coming from. I'm very curious with this topic specifically, because I've been meditating on it myself lately. Like, what is your definition of wealth, and how has that evolved through your coaching career, or through your life rather?
I'll start with the latter first. So my relationship to wealth has been, for the majority of my life, one of great challenge, because I grew up in an environment that shaped my relationship to wealth, which was of feast or famine, burn and build. My father was a gambling addict. And as a result of that, the extension of his addictions and his compulsions and his behaviors, just call them behaviors, let's just say, right? Let's not label them as compulsions or addictions. Let's just say behaviors. The result of his behaviors as a leader in the household really extended into the family unit. And so sometimes when there was a lot of money, we'd have a lot of things. And then when there wasn't a lot of money, there'd be things being sold and us not having things and him being in a very different temperament and mood. And we noticed that relationship, me and my brother and my mother, of course, as well. And so, you know, to me, then that carried over as that feast or famine, burn or build. So I didn't trust myself with money. You know, I didn't understand what money was. And money isn't, by the way, wealth isn't just money. We'll get to that definition in a moment, or at least what my definition is subjectively. You know, money is an access point. It's a tool, right? But it's also energetics. It's how we relate to anything really, really matters, right? And it defines how we live our lives. And so for me, what I took into my adult life was, let me actually go back a step. Couple that experience with a great deal of violence and abuse in the household that led and lent itself to a sense of unworthiness and non-deservedness. Those two big things coupled together really strained my relationship to money, because I didn't think I deserved money. I didn't think I was worthy of it. And I didn't know what having money really was, right? And being with money in safe and healthy ways and using money as a way to grow. See, for me, wealth is growth, right? So wealth is abundance. Wealth is our ability to grow out of patterns that no longer serve us and move into patterns that do serve us, that are more expansive. Other synonymous words that I would use with wealth is, as I've mentioned, growth. I've mentioned abundance, expansiveness. When we are in a mindset or in an energetic or an attitude or an emotional state of wealth, for me, we're not contracted in fear. So if something comes to us that's challenging, if a conflict arises, instead of us contracting and moving into a fight or flight or freeze mechanism instead of us being in this sympathetically activated nervous system response. And of course, sometimes you need to be in that high arousal response because it's calling, the circumstances are calling for, and you legitimately need to, you know, fight, flight or freeze to survive, right? To live. But beyond that, most of us are in these sympathetic activated nervous system responses consistently for no call it grounded reason outside of a pattern just keeping repeating itself, right? A neurological and psychological pattern repeating itself. So for me, wealth is expansiveness. It's our ability to expand in the moment, is to be open in the moment and spacious in a situation that can call for contraction when it doesn't need to, but is asking you to contract, right? And so wealth, yes, it's mindset, but it's also the health of your nervous system. Again, I'm going to keep coming back to these words, spaciousness and expansiveness. For me, wealth allows us to grow out of what no longer serves us into something that does. And so that means that we believe in ourselves. We have greater heightened self-worth. We have a capacity to see beyond the limitations of the present moment or of what we think we see. We can think laterally. We can think creatively. We have an ability to be generative and creative. So being generative and creative is part of our design, if you like, as being a human. And so our generative capacities and generative capabilities can only be accessed when we feel spacious and expansive within ourselves, right? If we feel contracted, we can't be creative. We can't think and feel laterally. We can't be vulnerable and real with others. We don't feel safe in our bodies. We don't trust other people. For me, wealth is all those things, is being able to trust. So I'm going into, I guess, maybe more complex definitions of wealth, or like really expanding beyond just, hey, you're wealthy when you have resources and access to resources. Yes, that's part of it, but it's so much more than that as well. Yes, if you have dollars in your bank account that come in and come out, and when as they come out and more comes in and more comes out and then more comes in than what came out, like, yes, that's wealth as well, right? As an example. But it's the energetics that underpin that actually happening, or the actualization of that in the physical manifested world. And so, yes, wealth's a mindset, but wealth is a clearing. Like when you are clear of your trauma, clear of your stuff, clear of your shit, you can access greater levels of internal and external wealth.
I love that. I love that you brought that point into it, because I've noticed that the more inner work that I've done, the more capacity I've had to bring in wealth. And the more I've been able to make as an entrepreneur has been in direct correlation to how deep I'm willing to go with myself. And so I'd love to know more about the energetics of wealth and how, like, what's an example of something that somebody can clear in their nervous system that might result in a greater capacity to do more, be more, and receive more in compensation from the world from the energy that they're putting out. So if somebody's having that experience of that cycle of feast or famine, like they make a lot and everything's great, and then they have a period of time where they're not making anything and it's famine, how does somebody break out of that cycle? Or what are some examples that you've seen in the work that you've done or with yourself that have been a way of somebody actually breaking out and having a breakthrough in that area of their lives?
So I can speak directly from the feast or famine perspective. And so for me, it was really a direct result of the volatility that I experienced in my childhood. So what was familiar to me was uncertainty. What was familiar to me, not only uncertainty in our financial circumstances, you know, my parents would always be arguing about bills, and always be arguing about not enough money coming in and not saving any money, and how are we going to do the shopping next week, and how are we going to pay this bill, and all of that, right? We, my brother and I, were really exposed to all of that. My parents fought very openly in front of us. And so there was a lot of uncertainty, and it didn't take that long as we grew up to realize that if we don't have any money, we can't eat. And if we can't eat, that's not a good thing, or we can't pay the mortgage. Like, you know, you realize, you figure out things pretty young as a kid, right? And so that uncertainty was there, but also there was uncertainty in my day-to-day life. Like, is my dad going to be angry today? Is he going to hit me today? Are my mum and dad going to physically fight today? Is mum going to scream and yell at me today? Like, there was just so much uncertainty. And so that was what was familiar. And so anytime there was consistency in my adult life, it felt unsafe, paradoxically. because it was unfamiliar. So I would create circumstances where I would make a lot of money, but blow a lot of money, spend it on things that were just spending it on things, whether it was experiential trips, whether it was on clothes, whether it was on, I mean, back then it was, again, just being very honest, like it was sex workers and prostitutes and all different types of things, you know, whatever, just spending my money, just wasting my money in so many different ways, right? And then I'd come back to the uncertainty. I'd come back to the famine. Well, if I'm in famine, I've got to create feast for myself. So then I'd go back and work hard and work really hard and panic. And it was the panic that got me to work hard. And so I was caught in these vicious cycles, right? But because they were familiar, they fed my sense of what was safe, even though I didn't want that anymore. So until I directly dealt with the childhood wounds and the trauma and the relationship to my parents and my childhood, and really learned to regulate my nervous system through somatic practices, through breath work, through inner child work, through various other modalities, I wasn't able to get into consistency. I wasn't able to, and I had to change some beliefs as well around what success really was. Oh, it's, you know, the those that are successful have to have a really hard path. Challenges, yes, necessary actually for growth, but a hard path, no. So a lot of paradigms I had to shatter, but it couldn't happen without really learning to regulate my nervous system. And it couldn't happen really without dealing with the old repressed and suppressed traumas that were really stuck in my body and in my mind.
Let's, I mean, that's a really powerful explanation of what you needed to do and where you needed to go in order to actually deal with that, especially being able to regulate your nervous system, recognizing that what you perceived as safe was actually inconsistent and chaotic, right? It was this like stressed environment of uncertainty. That's what was familiar, so it was safe. And going into that and having the courage to go into those depths with yourself, not really knowing, because anytime we go into the void of the unconscious work and the somatic work, it can be a scary place. So it speaks to the courage that you've had to go in there and also to bring other people through that. So I'm curious about the somatic work, right? The breath work, because I've experienced a breath work session with you, and it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. And I'm curious, like, what got you into doing and facilitating breath work?
Yeah. So, firstly, thank you for that. And just as an FYI, if you can, come March 27th, because it's open to men this month as well.
Oh, so awesome. I'm there.
We'd love to have you and your lady.
Yeah.
At Flow Yoga in Westgate. You know, a couple of times a year, we open it up to men as well. So, man, very simply, what got me into this is I was very close to, I was in the phase of suicidal ideation. I never wanted to kill myself. I wasn't interested in that, but I was really contemplating it as an option. It's like, I can't shift this pain that I'm in. I'm really trying, legitimately trying. It's really overwhelming. It feels too much. I can't go back to ignoring it. I just can't. Like, I physically couldn't go back to ignoring it without maybe taking copious amounts of drugs. And I wasn't willing to do that, because I'd been running from my pain for too long. And I was just everywhere I turned, I felt like it was either a rock or a hard place or a wall. And I was like, well, maybe suicide is the way out. Like, fuck, I don't know, maybe this is it. And I was logically moving through that. And a friend of mine, and I hadn't completely given up yet, I wasn't at that point, but a friend of mine said, hey, there's this amazing breathwork practitioner. By the way, this was like 12 years ago or something. 11 years ago.
So you had already been in this personal development world when you were feeling this. Like,
oh,
you
yeah.
Knew,
oh, yeah,
all
yeah.
The techniques and all the stuff.
Oh, yeah, 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 man. Like, I intellectually understood everything, but as I really opened myself up and I had a moment where I had to, I couldn't turn back. So I was on this deep, very dark path at this time, you know, excavating and unpacking deep into shadow work and dark night of the soul, if you like. And it was, you know, it wasn't my first throughout my life, but it was a big one. And so he said, hey, there's this amazing breathwork practitioner from Europe. She's brilliant. You should see her. I said, cool, I'll try anything. And man, it blew me open. It was like nothing I had experienced before. The way she held for me, the way she supported me, the technique, like everything was just, it was just ripe for me to release things I've never released before within me. And it was just so intense and so, I felt like I was on a DMT trip and an emotional release purge. It was just such a purge. And it just changed my life, man. It gave me hope, even though I touched some really painful places, but I also felt relief and reprieve after that. And it just changed the course of my life. The following years were still very tough, actually. However, it was a big turning point. And I came back to contemplating suicide again, but it never in the same ways that I did before, and never knowing that having moved through that, I can move through anything. And it gave me great, you know, I call intelligent hope. And it gave me an opportunity to know parts of myself in ways that I'd never known before. And because of that, that's where I started studying that a lot more as well, having it as a practice within my own life, you know, seeking it, working with different practitioners. Like I really immerse myself in that space.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, man. And thank you for sharing that. It's a vulnerable topic, right? Having, you know, that darkness as an experience in your past, and mm-hmm. the ideation of being suicidal, and even being able to share about it, speak about it. But it really, I'm sure, helps. It helps me to hear that, right? I'm sure it helps the listeners to be able to hear you share that vulnerably, and to know that there is a path. There is a path towards resolution. And when the intellectualization of, you know, some of these things isn't working, sometimes the path is to go within and actually feel those things. I remember our first meeting, you helped me feel something that I didn't even realize was there. I mean, like, which I'm sure is nothing new, right? We don't realize that these emotions are trapped so deeply within. But it was, for me, it was a rage that I didn't know it was there. I never associated myself with being an angry person. And when I think about it, when I like reflect back on it now, anger was not something that was okay growing up in the household, right? It was always like anger equals loss of control. There was never an understanding, just a demonization of the anger. And it sounds like when you were going through and you were touching all these places within yourself, you were going through emotions that you probably never had the opportunity to even feel, let alone reflect upon. And that one thing I'm very curious about is I've noticed this recently in the last few years working with my clients, but a lot of emotions, like for example, one person's anger is not the same as another person's anger. In other words, the sensations and what they've labeled them are completely different. And I'm curious, let's go with anger, because I feel like that's a common one that gets really misunderstood through our culture. How do you view anger, and what does it mean, and what do people misunderstand about it?
So what is my view on anger, and what do so many people misunderstand about the emotion and energetic of anger? Mm-hmm. And so my view on anger is that it's constructive and useful when expressed and connected to and leveraged in the quote unquote right way. If we're using our anger to constantly dominate others and power over others and to control others because we feel so unsafe within ourselves and we have unresolved trauma, and the come from for our anger is a defense strategy or protective strategy to push people away, to overpower people, to make them feel less than, to make them feel weak so that we feel empowered, that's a misuse of anger. Anger is also a very useful tool, emotion, physiological state, or lends itself to a physiological state that also in times of danger help us activate and mobilize, right? So it plays a role. I think the anger that you're speaking to is more in our psychosocial relational constructs on a sort of day-to-day basis. And so if we're not in touch, so firstly, if anger is repressed and suppressed collectively and individually, and we struggle to access this part of us that actually exists, and it's there to it exists for many reasons. It exists as a defensive strategy, like a legitimate defensive strategy. It exists as a release and an outlet for us physiologically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, etc. It's there to forge boundaries as well. And there's different ways anger can be expressed. Anger can be expressed as a very firm boundary. It doesn't have to be you swearing at someone or you physically hitting someone or anything like that. Yes, anger can lead to violence, but anger is not violence per se. And you can have violence without anger as well. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing, but anger is there to teach us something about ourselves as well. Like if we're angry about something, then our boundaries in some capacity have been violated, or a belief that we hold about something that's happened in the world feels unjust to us or unfair or not appropriate. And so anger is a signal that tells us more about ourselves. But it's what we do with the anger. If we're not taught how to be with anger, if we're shown that anger is bad or negative, if anger, again, is collectively or individually repressed, or it's repressed in the family dynamic, or it's overused in the family dynamic, or we have an unhealthy relationship to this thing that can be very, very powerful for healing, actually, and also very, very powerful for interpersonal relationships. And so anger is a fuel as well. And we need to reconcile within ourselves. Ultimately, it's our self-worth, man. So when we have heightened levels of two things, self-worth combined with, you know, I don't want to say cleared trauma, but let me say it this way. Self-worth combined with a deeper, sincere exploration of our trauma, right? Those two things combined, heightened self-worth and a deeper understanding connection to our trauma, and also having moved through, equilibrated our trauma, closing those loops, so we are no longer being run by unresolved, unprocessed pain and wounds, that lends itself to having a healthier relationship with anger. And we'll be less prone to be angry and project that anger. We'll be more prone to have a healthy outlet to our anger and not be scared of it and not carry shame around it. But when we're in low self-worth and we have a ton or any really scale of unprocessed, unresolved trauma, what generally happens is we're very loose with our anger, which can of course turn to either frustration, or frustration turns to anger, or it can turn to rage, or it can turn to a number of different things that are even denser in the way that they present themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating to see the connection between anger, the unresolved trauma, because I've noticed for myself, it's been actually since the moment that you and I met, it has been a meditation of mine, is to like meditate on that feeling and like, what is it bringing up within me? And I've noticed that it's actually bringing up within me a deep sense of care and respect for what I really value, and a desire to protect what I value. And so it has shown up in the form of firm boundaries. It hasn't been a blow up of any kind, you know, as of late or ever, really. I always used to turn my anger on myself, and as a result would experience physical pain, like muscle, joint issues, like all kinds of stuff. And today I'm completely pain-free when it comes to that, because of the willingness to sit with it and embrace that feeling rather than to condemn it. And it's resulted in better boundaries. And the result of those better boundaries have resulted in not being taken advantage of in business, or allowing myself to be taken advantage of, to actually be able to stand my ground, to go for what I value, and to live a life that is more aligned. And, you know, going back to the wealth topic, just processing that and being willing to be with it and embrace it and use it as a fuel has allowed my income to grow. So I find it fascinating how those things are connected. And when you are able to use the fuel of those emotions properly and to resolve your stuff, it can result in wealth in all areas, whether that is financial, relational, spiritual. I've noticed just a massive change as a result of that. And I think one of the most pivotal moments was that experience that we had together, where you helped me essentially release a lot of what was trapped inside.
Well, that's beautiful, man. I really acknowledge you for being open and so courageous to step into that. I remember that moment very clearly, and thank you for sharing that. And I think this could be really useful as well for the audience, but for you too, for me, just to recap this mm-hmm. as well. Are you familiar with Dianetics, like Dianetic energy levels? And
I've heard of it, but I'm not too familiar yeah. with it.
Yeah, so what's his name? I think it's Hawkins, Dr. Hawkins. So Hawkins created like these levels or states, not states, levels of consciousness mm-hmm. in relation to like not just emotional signatures, but also states of being. So like, for example, and he's graded them, right? Like, so like zero mm-hmm. to 1,000, and enlightenment mm-hmm. is anywhere between 700 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. And that's the highest level, right? And these are measurable energetic frequencies. Mm-hmm. And so shame is at, I believe, 20. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very low. Now, anger is interesting. So anything below 200 is considered destructive, and anything above 200 is considered constructive. Mm-hmm. Anger sits at 150. Mm-hmm. So anger can be constructive or destructive, right? Which is interesting, which is what we spoke about earlier. Courage is at 200. And so by this, and 200 is considered neutral. And so you need courage to be able to move out of these constant destructive phases, like, you know, grief, apathy, fear, unbridled desire, pride. I think I said apathy, shame, you know, like those there, right? But anger is interesting because it's pretty close to 200. 150 is close to 200. But it can be destructive. It can be, and it of course can lead to rage. I'm not sure where rage sits on the scale. Like if it's maybe just connected to anger, or maybe it's a little lower in vibration. But it's probably more like fear. Fear is like 100, so rage is probably around there, like between 100 to 150. But again, irrespective, it's an interesting scale, and it's an interesting model to look at. And again, like, you know, it's definitely. There's controversy around this. I don't think it's quote unquote hard science. However, there's some real value in this as well. And this guy's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually, I have the book, Power versus Force, right over there.
Yeah.
It has great that book. Scale. Yeah. It's fantastic. That was my introduction into that. And yep. another one that I've been studying lately is Levels of Energy by Frederick Dodson. Very similar mm-hmm. scale. Have you explored that book?
I haven't explored the book. No.
Yeah. So that one is
but
very
I will
similar.
Now that you mentioned it.
yeah. Yeah. For me, I actually enjoyed it more than Power versus Force in terms of an understanding and a practicality with it. And what was interesting is he explained the energies as not a hierarchy per se, but that it's just your state of being that you're holding at any one moment. And the longer you hold that state of being, the more it affects the outside world around you. And if you hold it for long enough, it actually ends up becoming your default, and then you start to create those circumstances as like a normality in your life. The interesting thing about it that he was talking about is how people can be vibrating at a higher state of being. In other words, like they could be in the 400 or 500s, right? With, you know, operating from a place of reason, a place of love, and yet still have pockets of unresolved energy in their psyche and in their body. And so when you see the mixed results that they have, it is actually a result not of the state that they're at, but of the stuff that they haven't dealt with yet that is still like pulling them down like an anchor.
Mm. Yeah, interesting, man. And, you know, so that's really fascinating because I'm pretty sure as well in this particular – and I've read Power versus Force, and I'm looking at my small library here and I got so many more books in Australia. It's so ridiculous. I was going to get my friend to send them over, side note, and it was going to cost thousands of dollars because they weighed so fucking much. Anyway, so I'll keep them there for now.
Yeah, maybe a Kindle for now.
Yeah, well, I was just literally thinking it's probably cheaper just to buy the books all over again. Yeah. Anyway, but I've got power. But there's another one that this gentleman Hawkins has done, and that's it's not here. I think I've got it on the stairs somewhere. I haven't gone through it fully yet, but I do remember. I haven't read the thing back to back yet or front to back. But what I do remember from reading what I've read so far is that he also speaks. And I can't get the numbers. I won't get the numbers right. So just excuse me. But basically, you know, let's say if someone's operating at reason 400, you know, love 500, somewhere there, if they're truly operating at that, and this is sort of the caveat, this is where I think what you're saying can really apply. But let's say they're operating at that level. They have the propensity to influence X amount of people. I can't remember what the exact number is. Call it a few hundred thousand. Then when they move into joy and peace, which is again higher, they have that one person operating at that level can influence, call it a million people, whatever. And then enlightenment, if that one person is, and I think the numbers are higher, but I'm just, you know, giving you an example, 700 to 1,000, they can influence, you know, 5 million people, right? And like impact 5 million people in that way. But to your point, I think there's a distinction between, okay, this person's operating in love, but are there a lot of holes in their game, for lack of a better term, right? Is there a lot of pain that they're still harboring, and they can touch love, but they can't stay there long enough? And so I think that, and there's no judgment on that at all. It's more so knowing yourself enough to say, hey, there's some areas here that I really need to grow into. This is how I'm going to do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's where the journey of our lives and of our development, there's always something that we could be working on, always something that we could be improving, right? It's a cliche that, you know, it's constant, never ending improvement, but it's true, right? And a lot of it I found is not so much an addition to, but a letting go of, like a subtraction of what no longer serves, of what essentially tethers us to the old version of who we used to be, or to our past traumas. And being able to deal with those things, right? We release density, we release weight, we're able to move faster through the world and more effectively, and our impact is able to expand as a result of such a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about, this may seem like a bit of a pivot from here, but this question has been on my mind for a while, and you're like the one person that I really wanted to ask this, but there's, you know, there's a trend, or I would say like a phrase that gets thrown around often in our culture today, which is toxic masculinity. And it at least whenever I hear that term, it feels like kind of like any other label where we're discounting something that is a lot more complex than, you know, people are giving it credit for by giving that label. But I'm curious, what, in your view, like what does that mean, toxic masculinity, and what is it? What is healthy masculinity?
Oh yeah, big questions. So toxic masculinity doesn't exist without toxic femininity. Mm-hmm. Because if masculinity and femininity are simply energetic signatures that reside within every human being and every expression, it's a duality that exists within us. And duality can often be created to create a sense of richness in learning, right? Then irrespective of biological sex or gender or identity or anything like that, these energetics reside within you, these do be energetics, these go flow energetics, these active passive energetics, right? And then from there, we're creating separation, but we're not creating separation from a place of judgment and better than and hierarchy. We're just simply creating separation for richness of learning, right? And saying that this is a kind of energetic expression, an actual expression in the world, relatable expression, and this is another kind. And in different circumstances, we require different elements of these at different times and maybe blending them together as well, right? Sometimes we've got to just be in that mode of get shit done, and sometimes you've just got to rest. And they're just different energetics, right? And sometimes people confuse the masculine and the feminine as if to say, well, masculine is purely 100% associated with males and feminine 100% associated with females. It doesn't work like that. Not to my understanding, not to what I've seen, not to the study that I've done. Is there a stronger force of masculinity or masculine characteristic or masculine presence in males? Generally speaking, from what I've seen, yes, but not always the case, right? So we just sort of create that distinction and lay that down first. To me, toxic anything is just an unhealthy expression of that thing. It's an extreme expression of that thing, right? And so an extreme expression of toxic masculinity may be oppression, right? An extreme expression of toxic femininity may be manipulation, like intentional manipulation. So that's really all I would say to toxic masculinity. And I think that the rhetoric and the narrative in the mainstream is bullshit. where really a lot of it is basically saying masculinity is toxic, full stop. And it's not, it's fucking not. And neither is femininity. Are there expressions of these energetics that can become unhealthy, extreme, et cetera? Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where we've got to keep ourselves in check as a society and as individuals, right? We've got to be honorable enough, self-honorable enough to do so. And, you know, in enough humility as well to be able to check ourselves and surround ourselves with people that also would check us too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I would say to that.
I love that you said that. I feel the same. I think it's a bullshit term that people essentially use to cop out of reflecting upon themselves, especially as, you know, you understand the law of correspondence, the as within, so without, you start to realize that everything that agitates you outside is really and truly a reflection of what might be going on inside. So it's an inner work job when that stuff comes up. And I think you're completely right with that. Like, toxic anything is just an unhealthy expression. And an unhealthy expression is one that is unaware of that which lies underneath the surface, right? And is expressing as a means of attempting to cope with that sensation of inner powerlessness to change something or a misunderstanding of the self. And I think that's spot on in that sense, that the more as a society we label things and we write them off with just this very convenient term as a way of demonizing, saying bad is over there and good is over here on the side that I stand, I think a better approach, like you're saying, is to take a moment to check ourselves, to have that self-awareness, to even ask ourselves, where is this in me? What is it in me that is causing me to have such a reaction to what I'm viewing and seeing here? And I've found that question to be extremely powerful, you know, ode to Carl Jung when it comes to that type of work.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome, man. Now, when it comes to, let's say, a healthy expression of masculinity, because I know you coach a lot of men, you run a men's group in Austin. I've been to the workouts. It's awesome. What is a healthy expression of masculinity as well as femininity? And what can somebody do in today's age to begin moving towards that if they find that they're on, let's say, the unhealthy expression side of it?
So I often get asked that question. It's a great question, man. And we so as humans, especially in the masculine paradigm that we live in, we want structure, we want rules, we want boundaries or masculine characteristics. We want frameworks, right? Like, tell me the thing that defines, we want definition. Tell me the thing that defines the thing, so then I can be the thing and then be in alignment with the thing that defines the thing, and then I am that thing, right? And so it was just fine. It's not an issue. And how I often lead this question or answering this question is, like, I'm not here to tell anyone how to be a man or anyone how to be in their masculine energetic. It is a process of discovery. However, I can tell you how, you know, I live my life by some of the characteristics that may define what masculine virtue looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll make your own decision if that works for you, you know. And so, again, like, some of the virtues or the characteristics that I'm going to, you know, share with you right now, ultimately, man, these are human constructs first, right? They're human constructs first. And the feminine will have its own version of this as well, you know. So provision and protection as an example, like, I'm a fierce protector of my family. It doesn't mean my wife is not, and it doesn't mean that she hasn't got her own feminine version of that, or that she doesn't access her female-bodied masculine expression of protectiveness, right? Just to give an example, I don't mean to confuse people listening to this. I hope it doesn't. I hope it actually, if anything, it clarifies, right? Because what I'm attempting to really do is create an openness and conscientiousness towards the thing that I'm saying to pique curiosity, so you don't shut it down straight away. Because if you don't shut it down straight away, you may be open and we may grow together in something, right? And again, what I'm saying is, you don't have to agree with me. That's I'm completely okay with you not agreeing with me, but be open to the possibility of whatever I'm sharing, could it be applicable in your life, right? So for me, healthy masculinity is courage as well. Healthy masculinity is moving beyond our pain and trauma and not being defined by that, and then not allowing that to run our lives, and then not injecting that and projecting that into our family unit or communities, right? Being in our healthy masculine is being connected to our physical bodies, being strong in our physical bodies, being grounded and connected to earth as well, being connected to, you know, if you follow many different cultural lineages, earth is considered the feminine. Not in every cultural lineage, but in many, earth is considered the feminine, right? And so being connected to the feminine in that way, being in reverence of ourselves, being confident, challenging ourselves as men, as masculine men, or challenge really is in the realm of masculinity. So actively, proactively seeking challenge, whether it's applying for the job that you think you won't get, but go through the process anyway. Is it jumping in a cold bath every morning? Is it hitting the gym and doing the exercise? Is it having the hard conversation? Like, do things that are challenging that help build you as a human and help expand your skill sets, right? On that, learn new things. And with your hands specifically, like really learn, like I'm learning to play golf right now. I've never, 42 years I've been alive, I've never played golf. I'll be honest, I had judgments towards it. I always knew it was difficult, always believed that it was difficult, and it is, but I never gauged it as a sport. I thought, sport, unless you're fucking in some form of combat and physical activity, like golf ain't a fucking sport. It's tough, that's man. I have a whole new respect for it now. I'll go into that another time.
Yeah. But I'm glad that you're opening up
my life. Where it's great. yeah, man. Because it's like, what sport? It's not a sport. It's a fucking activity. It's not a sport. But whatever it is, it's fucking tough and it's fun, man. I'm really enjoying it, right? So I'm learning something new and I'm enjoying it. And for many reasons, because I'll tell you briefly why. I've done the first part of my life up to now, I should say, with a lot of power. Like, it's a lot of fucking bulldozing through, right? Like, my nickname used to be the sledgehammer. Just fucking hard, go hard. And I think I need more finesse and precision. Golf represents that in my life, right? So, you know, another masculine virtue is to know when to lead and be led. There's no situation, there's no high-level, high-performing situation where an individual has to know and has to learn when to lead and how to lead and then when to be led.
That's very important. I mean, the willingness to be helped, essentially. I mean, it allows that cycle to actually flow when you are helping and willing to be helped at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. And then the other part as well, and something that I'm constantly working on as a man is creating safety and consistency in my environment for the people that I love and care for, you know, because sometimes I let my patterns or my wounds or my pain get the better of me. Mm-hmm. And I project that and inject that into my family unit, whether it's, you know, my temper coming out or being impatient or moving fast and abruptly or raising my voice or whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. It's having greater mastery over my emotions. Again, like I said at the beginning, human constructs first, right? These are great, I think, great practices to have as human beings, but particularly as men, I think it's important. And then, you know, then there's mental mastery, there's sexual mastery. That's really important for so many different reasons, because our sexual expression in the world is part of our personality. It's part of our spiritual practice. Having a very sound spiritual practice is important. I'm starting to get back into one again that really serves me. There's a period of time there where I was a little, you know, lax with it, and not all of it, but parts of it. You know, I'd only be putting parts of it into my day, and now I'm doing a lot better with that, and I'm coming back into that where I feel more whole. And I also have a tendency to be very hard on myself, so working with that energetic pattern as well, that's been interesting too. But you know, that having a grounded practice is very good for healthy masculinity.
Amazing. Yeah, I think all of those are incredibly helpful. And I love the stipulation that you made with these are human constructs before they're anything else, but they are kind of like what is talked about in Zen, right? These are different methodologies that point to the truth, but the methodologies themselves or the principles themselves are not the truth. They're just a pointing mechanism. And I really appreciate you giving that as a pre-frame before going into them. I think that's really important for people to understand so that they can develop their own unique expression of whatever that means to them, right? I think the name of the game is not to be like the people that you hear on podcasts or see on Instagram or YouTube, but to be you, essentially, like to be the unique expression of you. And yes, allow yourself to be guided and helped by, you know, different people. And at the end of the day, living in an authentic way. So I had a couple more questions for you before we wrapped up. The first one is, we talked about Asraya in the beginning, and we talked about some of, you know, the breathwork stuff that you do here in Austin. And I briefly mentioned the men's group that you run. So if people are listening to this, they want to know more about what you do, where can they find you, or what's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, thank you. StefanosSafandos.com. So much information there. Asraya, Asraya.io. And any of my social media handles, at StefanosSafandos.
Perfect. And my last question for you is, this podcast, right, the interviews that I do, they're on the Zen Stoic path, right? They're on this podcast, but these interviews are for a special conversation that likes to take place, where it's not just about Zen and Stoic philosophy or Zen Stoic philosophy, but it's about the path to liberation. So I like to bring people on who exemplify what it is to be on that path. So for you, what does it mean to live a liberated life?
One where I consistently come back to my ownership of the patterns and the behaviors and the ways of being that no longer serve me. And I keep coming back to ownership of that so that I can actively shift it.
Beautiful. Stefanos, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.